Welcome back. I'm Mark Fisher of The Washington Post, sitting in for Kodjo Nnamdi. Guinness is preparing to build a brewery and taproom in Baltimore County, Maryland. It's the first that they're building in the U.S. in more than 60 years. And while the company's arrival will raise the profile of Maryland beer and add jobs to the local market, the state's existing craft brewers are a little bit uncertain about what the move might mean for them. Just today, the Maryland Senate is considering a bill that would limit operating hours for some of the state's small independent beer makers. And joining me now to discuss the state's future in beer making is Liz Murphy. She's a columnist at the Capital Gazette and founder of the blog Naptown Pint. And welcome. So like many states today, Maryland is experiencing a craft brewing renaissance, and some would say it's a little bit behind some other states. What's keeping the state from being a stronger player in the beer industry?
Well, I think there are a couple of contributing factors to that. One of the biggest challenges that we see across the state of Maryland is the fact that while we have legislated at a state level a number of different classes of breweries and things like that, it still actually has to then be legislated county by county. So, for example, the rules that may govern Flying Dog, which is in Frederick, will not be the same rules that breweries that try to stand up in Anne Arundel County. It'll be a different playbook overall. So that makes it a challenge to do anything at a state level when you have this kind of dysfunctional patchwork across the entire state.
And another big concern, I think, for some of the smaller independent brewers is how beer is distributed. So how historically has Maryland gotten the beer from the maker to the drinker?
Well, it kind of goes back to something we actually do see across the country, the creation of the three-tier system, which was put in place after Prohibition as to ensure that to save us from ourselves, so to speak. It means that there of the three tiers, you have a manufacturer, which is the brewer, the wholesaler, which is where the beer goes to. And then the
wholesaler, dreaded middleman. Right.
Yeah. And then the wholesaler then passes it on to retailers. And so at each of those different tiers, there's a different markup and ensuring that that gets in the hands of consumers, but in a way that is safe and doesn't bring us back to our earlier eras of vice.
And so the hot trend these days, of course, breaks apart that three-tier system and takes the beer directly from the small craft brewer to the consumer, cutting out the middleman in many cases.
I mean, I would say, yes, you have these brewery tap rooms that you're seeing at the production level, but I'll also say no in that the percentage of beer that's going through these tap rooms is minimal. When you talk about the beer that's being distributed and purchased by consumers across the state, we're not even breaking a percentage point in terms of that beer being sold through tap rooms.
And yet there is a whole set of legal regulation governing those tap rooms. These are the spaces where you can drink beer brewed on the premises. And so what's Maryland's attitude toward those tap rooms, and how is it different from, say, the district or other states around the country?
If you had asked me that question 2 weeks ago, I think I probably would have had a different answer. But right now, with the current legislative agenda that's in place and going in front of the Senate, the attitude seems to be we will increase barrel limits, which is what Guinness required in order to come to the state. But
barrel limits are.
Limits meaning how much beer they are allowed to sell in a tap room. Currently on the books, it's 500 barrels. The original request was 4,000.
Is that per year?
Per year, yes. Okay. And it's actually still very below standard. And across the country, the second lowest after that is 25,000 a year. So the request was, yes, we'll bring it up to 2,000, but that will also require some compromise is the word being used.
You can join our conversation about beer and tap rooms and the beer industry in Maryland by calling 1-800-433-8850 or email us at kodjo@wamu.org. And you can let us know if you're a beer fan. Is Guinness moving to Maryland a win for our region? What kind of innovation would you like to see in the industry locally? And if you do brew beer in Maryland, how did you navigate those hurdles in establishing your business. 1-800-433-8850 is the number. And Liz Murphy, tell us about this question of on-site drinking. And there was a bill that just passed in Maryland's House of Delegates that would let small breweries sell more beer on premise. Is it enough of a boost to make a real difference, or does it still keep the number way behind what other states are doing?
Well, like I said, it is an increase for sure, but it is still very much behind the standard and the precedent that we're seeing set across the country. I mean, there are many states that don't even have barrel limits on what can be sold in these tap rooms. I think the challenge here is that, yes, you see the limits, but then there are a couple other stipulations that were introduced in this bill that I think is where we're starting to see that aforementioned concern that you mentioned. The fact that currently hours for craft brewers at this level are done at the county level. And now it's being taken down across the board, so everybody would have to close at 9 p.m.
And what are the political forces that are pushing back against this being a more liberal, expansive kind of approach?
To be honest, I wish I had a more clear picture of that. I spoke with Delegate Talmadge Branch, who was the original sponsor of the original House Bill 1283, which actually was just a repeal bill to roll back hours on brewery tap rooms. And he said that while he stood by his original intent behind that bill, he was not sure where the amendments came from, and that he was under the impression that it was a compromise, which included brewers having a seat at the table. I also spoke with Delegate Luke Klippinger, who also said he was under the impression that this brewery bill had, quote, industry support. And Delegate Eric Ludke of District 14 said, all I will say is I should have voted against it. We didn't know how bad it was when it came across. So that's, I think, this gray area that we're wading into. Typically, we're seeing a discussion where we're able to have this three-tier system versus progress in craft beer discussion, but it's hard to have it when we're at a point where nobody's really saying these were the amendments I put forth and this is why.
Let's hear from Michael in Richmond, Virginia, who's an investor in a small brewery. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, folks. How's it going? First-time caller, and I love the show. I invest in a brewery in Richmond, Virginia, and we recently had Stone Brewing Company come to town, and the small brewers were a little concerned about that bigger craft brewer coming to town. But I can say that they are an excellent neighbor. They have embraced all of the other breweries. They dedicated them their staff hirings to not go after the other staff of the small breweries. So I think that Guinness coming to town will be good for craft brewing. It also will bring people to that spot because it's a destination, just like Stone is a destination. Guinness will be a destination. Any deregulation that can happen that can help small businesses, small brewers, not distributors, because they have the distribution laws in this country are restrictive to small brewing companies. But the money that is being generated in Virginia because of the craft beer deregulation that happened is really spurring economic growth. I know our governor, Terry McAuliffe, comes to our tap room and has beers on occasion, and he loves the craft brew area. So a message to the legislature of Maryland, hey, take a page out of Virginia's playbook enable economic growth.
Thank you, Michael. WAMU producer Ruth Tam had a conversation earlier with Dwayne Kratt of Diageo, I think it's pronounced, which is the company that owns Guinness, which is opening a brewery in Maryland. And here's what Dwayne Kratt had to say about the bill that passed the Maryland House.
We went in with it asking for a higher on-premise cap than what they passed. But what they did pass, what the House passed in 1283, was an increase in that on-premise cap that will get us going. And for that, we're pleased. They also, though, added a couple other pieces of the element that we have some concerns with, as do the Maryland Brewers. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to talk to the folks in the Senate about that, and hopefully they'll make some changes, and then hopefully the House will concur, and that'll all happen by April 10th, and we'll get to work building the brewery and helping the beer category grow. And that's the key thing. You know, what we really need to do is build the beer category that helps everyone. And our model, quite frankly, is taking a look at what's going on in Asheville, North Carolina, where some regional brewers have come in. They've been part of the community, and they've grown the category. And that's just a key thing, again, not only for us, but the Maryland Brewers and our distributor partners and retail customers.
So, Liz Murphy, obviously Guinness is trying to get what they need from this bill. The small craft brewers around the state maybe don't have quite the same throw weight as Guinness does. This bill was one of several attempts in Annapolis to kind of even the playing field for different kinds of brewers. Why do you think that the bill that was passed in the House didn't quite do the job?
Part of this is going to be conjecture on my part, because, as I said before, it's been hard to get anybody to go on record to say I own these amendments or we own these amendments. The other thing I will say, too, is that I know that a lot of Maryland brewers were very excited to see Guinness come to Maryland, because this is a rising tide raises all ships kind of mentality in terms of how we got to where we are today. I mean, some of the things I've heard from at least original versions of this bill is that there was concern about interference from brewery tap rooms with local taverns. Again, going back to my conversation with Delegate Branch, you know, he had stated that there were concerns from either retailers or interests of retailers that there was that interference that could potentially damage their business. But to date, there haven't been any data or statistics put forward to really support that assertion. So now we have this bill in front of us with House Bill 1283 that is asking Maryland craft brewers to make concessions in order to get these barrel limits in return. But it's a give and take, where I think the concern is you're asking us to change our business in a way that may be harmful, but at the same time, you haven't proven damage.
We have an email from Ellen who asks, isn't Guinness made in Ireland? What will they make here in Maryland? And I should note that you can check out kojoshow.org later this afternoon for the full conversation that producer Ruth Tam had with Dwayne Kratt from the company that owns and controls Guinness. And you'll learn more about their plans there. But Liz Murphy, what's your sense of what this Guinness initiative really is here in Maryland?
Well, they aren't going to be brewing the traditional stout that I think everybody has come to know and love. I actually had it at my own wedding. My last name is Murphy.
So you were obliged to do so.
Yes, I was definitely obliged, and I think my husband would have had my head otherwise. But my understanding is they're going to be brewing their blonde American lager, but it's also going to be an opportunity for them to collaborate with other local brewers and also do some experimentation and engage consumers in the process of, what do you think? You know, as the Guinness brand continues to grow and evolve, I think it's a really exciting opportunity, which is why I think everybody was really excited to have them coming to our state.
Now, a lot of people, when they hear the words Maryland and beer, they think of Natty Bo, National Bohemian, but although 90% of Natty Bo sales are in Baltimore, the beer is actually brewed in a MillerCoors facility, a couple of them in North Carolina and Georgia. So there's no real Maryland connection there.
No.
How can beer help Maryland establish a kind of cultural identity?
Well, the interesting thing about it is that when you take a look across the craft beer landscape, and one of the things I find most exciting about it is that Maryland is a diverse state, both agriculturally and just from each county having its own real identity. And thus the brewers end up being very much representative of that landscape, not just in the literal sense, like you have a RAR in Cambridge out on the Eastern Shore, where a lot of their beers are, you know, it's the Nanticoke Nectar after the Nanticoke River, Bucktown Brown, things like that. But then you also have larger brewers like Flying Dog, who use their success to give back to the community. They partner with the Oyster Recovery Partnership based out of Annapolis, Maryland, and all of those beers help recovery and oyster recovery in the Chesapeake Bay.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Liz Murphy is a columnist at Capital Gazette and founder of the beer blog Naptown Pint. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's it for the show today, but there's always more happening online where we'd like to keep our conversation going. You can follow us on Twitter at Kojo Show and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Kojo Show. We'd like to hear your thoughts about where to take the conversation about missing girls in D.C. from here. We'll share them on the air as we continue following this story in the days ahead. And we'll meet you back on the air tomorrow at noon when we'll explore the concerns many people have about Alexandria's aging water and sewer system and whether it's polluting the Potomac River. We'll also look at the effort to breathe new life into the C&O Canal and why one local group has hired the firm behind New York's Highline Park to look at that neglected jewel. That's noon till two, noon till one tomorrow. I'm Mark Fisher in for Kojo today. Thanks for listening.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelisa Schrobsdorf, Ruth Tam, Elizabeth Weinstein, Avery Kleiman, and Taria Rogers. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Cliff Gallagher has been on the phones. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.